Community Radio is the proud co-sponsor of the Worldbeat PDX monthly series featuring Wamba on Thursday, May 12th at the Analog Cafe in Portland. Wamba plays percussive jazz and funk with a strong Worldbeat influence and will be playing two sets that evening. Again, that's Wamba on Thursday, May 12th at the Analog Cafe, 720 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the U.S. Department of Justice filed a federal lawsuit this afternoon against North Carolina over the state's controversial HB2 bill, also known as the bathroom law.
The Multnomah County Deputy Sheriff's Association announced today a vote of no confidence in Sheriff Dan Staton.
And this evening, the Portland State University student government is considering a resolution that calls on the university to divest from four companies that support the Israeli military occupation of Palestine.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, May 9th, 2016. I'm Ken Jones.
And I'm Lisa Loving. Over 100 universities around the country have passed resolutions calling for the divestment of funds used to pay for the Israeli military occupation. Portland State University may be next on the list. Tonight, at a hearing that began just a few minutes ago, the Portland State University student government is considering a resolution that calls on the university to divest from four companies. The companies are Caterpillar, which produces armored bulldozers used to demolish Palestinian homes, G4S, formerly Wackenhut, which provides prison infrastructure, Hewlett-Packard, which has developed biometric technology used in checkpoints, and Motorola Solutions, which provides the Israeli military with high-tech surveillance cameras. The students have support from a variety of community groups, including Jewish Voice for Peace, the International Socialist Organization at PSU, and Disarm PSU. They say that Portland State recently adopted a socially responsible investment stance and are calling on the university to consider human rights against Palestinians as something that would qualify for divestment. At the same time, this week in Portland, the National Assembly of the United Methodist Church is taking place, and a similar resolution is under consideration there as well.
The Multnomah County Deputy Sheriff's Association announced today a vote of no confidence in Sheriff Dan Staton. Matt Ferguson, president of the association, released a statement that said, quote, "This action reflects our strong belief that Sheriff Staton has lost the trust of the county's rank-and-file law enforcement deputies and sergeants." The statement also said that Sheriff Staton leads, quote, "ruthlessly and unpredictably through fear and favoritism, threatening to fire those in his way, yet rewarding those who get in line." The Deputy Sheriff's Association represents law enforcement deputies who have jurisdiction in unincorporated Multnomah County. Last week, the Oregon Department of Justice completed an investigation of Sheriff Staton and found no criminal wrongdoing. Multnomah County Chair Deborah Cafori, along with American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon, criticized that finding. The DOJ report, however, did provide details of a meeting between Staton and Ferguson in which the sheriff is alleged to have offered a promotion to Ferguson if the Deputies Association were to cancel the no-confidence vote.
Yesterday, on Mother's Day, a new homeless encampment was created by the grassroots organization Advocacy 5. It is serving as an emergency domestic violence shelter for houseless women at risk of being sexually assaulted. The camp has been created before getting city permissions. Organizers say it's meant to spur the city into action to provide relief for those who are deemed the most vulnerable of the vulnerable. The lot being used for the encampment has already been slated for sale to be used for food carts and then later turned into apartments. The housing equipment that the group is using is made to be easily moved so that it may continually serve the community even in the face of removal.
The Portland Housing Bureau is set to spend $47 million this year on 8 affordable housing projects throughout the city. The 8 projects will create 840 affordable housing units. The average cost per unit of the mix of studio 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units will be $213,000 per unit. Critics claim the per unit cost is too high, pointing to a Central City Concern project that's being constructed for $110,000 per three-bedroom unit. The Portland Housing Bureau responded that their projects are green certified, use union labor, and are in some instances taller than the three-story Central City Concern project. A recent study found the city of Portland needs a total of 24,000 affordable housing units based on current job and income data. The 840 new affordable units are not expected to significantly impact the current housing emergency. A report found the city of Portland still has the fastest rising rental prices in the nation, but the rate is slowing. Any residents who wish to be placed on the priority list must apply by this Friday to be accepted. For more information, please call the Portland Housing Bureau at 503-823-2375 or visit portlandoregon.gov/PHB.
A major TriMet construction project along Southwest First Avenue in downtown Portland is expected to cause long delays and overcrowded trains throughout the MAX light rail system for the next 2 weeks. The MAX light rail tracks are being replaced for several blocks near the south end of the Steel Bridge. The closure will be in effect during the Portland Trailblazers playoff game tonight, so riders are advised to use alternative transportation to the game. TriMet officials are warning riders that construction will impact all areas of light rail service with reduced numbers of trains and changed route times. And they're encouraging people to go to trimet.org for more information.
A full house greeted Amy Goodman in Portland yesterday. KBOO's Theo Burke reports the long lines to get in didn't dampen anyone's spirit.
This is Theo Burke. I first talked to some folks at the Amy Goodman pre-event reception inside. We hear from a sponsor, Kathy Larson, and then from Eric Schumann.
I wanted to go see Amy Goodman anyway because I've followed her for years and like her, and so it was a win-win. I just find her very interesting and like strong women, and remember when she was doing reporting in Africa and beautiful things.
Amy Goodman is my hero.
She's your hero.
She is a prophetic voice for our age. She and Helen Caldicott, I think, are the two most important prophetic voices of this age. To have the opportunity to see and meet her in person, I would travel anywhere to do it.
Then we talked to some people waiting out in front of the Aladdin for Amy Goodman. In the lines, we first talked to Nathan and Wendy Osborne, originally from Florida and New York.
I used to listen to her in Tampa Bay, Florida, WMNF, in the late 90s, early 2000s, and the hurricanes happened, and her coverage on Charlie, Francis, Ivan, Jean, and Katrina changed my life and gave me a little more insight into a better place to live as opposed to, the South is, it's not getting better. And found my true love here, Wendy.
You're Wendy?
Yeah, that was actually my mom who got me listening to Democracy Now! On the radio in New York City, which is where I'm originally from.
New York.
Awesome. NPR. And yeah, I'm addicted now. Just lately, I love what she's been covering with Flint. Because again, you don't get the real story anywhere but, public radio.
Then we heard from Billy and Kevin, climate refugees from Northern California, now living in Portland.
We've been watching Democracy Now! For years. We love Amy. She's a personal hero of mine, actually. And she inspires me. And she just is the only one I still think that is delivering true journalism in the way it should be. And it's amazing what she has molded for me throughout the years. And from my college thinking, and be able to hear that voice still continue from the 80s and then the 90s. It was great. And it's, I turned him on to it, and he loves her. He loves watching it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Good. Do you have a favorite set of topics that she covers?
Boy.
Climate change.
Yeah, definitely. And, of course, all the LGBTQ progressive things. I mean, you guys are one of the few voices that really go into it.
And the whistleblowers.
Yeah, the whistleblowers.
The whistleblowers of voice.
And again, Democracy Now! Was early on in calling about climate change and the dangers of that. I mean, you guys, really did the siren before a lot of other people did.
I'm Theo Burke for the KBOO Evening News, reporting from the Aladdin Theater on Sunday, May 8th, during the Amy Goodman appearance.
This past Saturday, hundreds of thousands of people in cities around the world participated in the Global Marijuana March. Demonstrations and other actions calling for marijuana legalization and decriminalization took place in hundreds of cities in the U.S. and abroad. Several hundred people showed up in Pioneer Square for the event here in Portland to hear speakers, including State Treasurer Ted Wheeler and Oregon State Representative Tobias Reed, and to enjoy music from performers, including the Garcia Birthday Band. KBOO reporter Doug McVeigh was also there. He spoke with Scott Gordon, the new director of Portland Normal, about the event.
That was a good show today. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Real excited to be here at the 17th annual Global Cannabis March. We've been marching for quite a while now, doing this thing every year, and here we are again in 2016. We legalized in 2014 and still have a lot of work to do within the community to get what we implemented through Measure 91 kind of implemented how we want and how we voted for and how we expected it to be. So we're out here marching for freedom, or renter rights and employment rights and indoor Safe Air Act rights and just certain things that we need to continue on.
Right on. Like I say, good crowd. Now, do we have some more events coming up during the year? Do you work with Hempstock at all? What's going to be happening in the rest of this season?
I do. I'm work with Hempstock on the core staff there, and we're real excited to get that event going again in September. And you can look for that on the hempstock.org website, and also at HempstockPDX on the Twitter. And looking forward to that event. We have Seattle Hemp Fest that we're going to be going up to in August. And I'm now the new executive director for Portland Normal. And we're going to start kind of getting involved in the community. You know, consumers are a base out there that I'm not sure is represented enough. And so we're going to get out there and start supporting these causes that are so dear to us.
Right on. Portland Normal, you guys have meetings? What's up with that?
Portland Normal has recently gone through a little bit of a restructure change, recently added two new board members, Trista Okel and Lindsay Reinhardt, and so we're now up to seven board members again, and today was actually like a little bit of a relaunch for Portland Normal, and we're going to start getting our monthly meetings and kind of get everything going. It's taken us a little month. Transition isn't easy a lot of times, and so real excited to get them on board now and have our board of directors back to seven, so we have a full kind of team together and start getting out there and start representing consumers and the issues that we all fight. You know, Schedule 1, and it's just terrible. It's a travesty, and so we want to support that. We'd love to support Earl Blumenauer and some of the causes they had. We had a mayoral candidate, Ted Wheeler, here earlier talking about banking issues, and so that's real important for our cannabis businesses, our entrepreneurs, to be involved with banking. We want the same fairness of banking that other businesses have, so a lot of issues still to work with.
Fantastic. I wasn't here for Wheeler. It's great to see that. I mean, he's one of the leading mayoral candidates in the city. I saw Jesse Sponberg, one of the other candidates, had a booth, and of course Jennifer Valley is running for Clackamas County Commissioner. Do you see more of the politicians coming out and giving support to folks?
I really do. And as you mentioned, we also to add to who you mentioned, we also had Representative Tobias Reed, who was implemental in writing the Oregon Banking Cannabis Act. And so he is now also up for Ted Wheeler's position of a treasury. He's a secretary of treasury or something like that. There you go. And so he is now running for that. And he actually followed Ted Wheeler right here on the stage. And so today we've actually had four candidates running for offices here supporting this cause. And there's a couple more people that I don't really want to mention because they didn't make it, but they were so close and they wanted to come. We almost had an unbelievable keynote speaker. And so we do have some major kind of support coming. And they see this system. They know we're legalized. And they know here especially important as it was passed over 70%. And so it's definitely an overwhelming support. And Ted Wheeler definitely expressed that fact.
Terrific. I know you got to get your MC. You got to do a master of some ceremonies. But any closing thoughts for the listener? And where do people find out more through the website thing?
Yeah, thank you so much. We're at portlandnormal.org, and you can also find us on Twitter at portlandnormal as well. And you could also find me at 420radio.org also. And yeah, you know, we just got to keep fighting. Basically, the big message here and why we're here is we just got to keep fighting to end the drug war. The drug war is the main culprit of all this and why we're here. Schedule 2 is a direct cousin of the main culprit. I mean, Schedule 1, excuse me, is the main culprit of this. And so these are things that not only here in Oregon we got to change, but nationally we got to continue to just change. And so we strive and we keep going.
That was Scott Gordon, director of Portland Normal, speaking to KBOO's Doug McVeigh at last Saturday's Global Marijuana March.
State House District 44 candidate Sharon Nassett has been absolved of wrongdoing over allegations she published a fake voter's guide. But her campaign for office may have been accidentally destroyed by Democrats trying to use Citizens United tactics against other Democrats. KBOO's Lisa Loving has more.
Somebody published a fake voter's pamphlet in the Oregon State Representative District 44 race. But now Secretary of State Jeannie Adkins says it wasn't Sharon Nassett. The dramatic saga of State House candidate Sharon Nassett's campaign against incumbent Tina Kotek has made waves since last month when critics accused Nassett of publishing a fake voter's pamphlet.
And this flyer did not say who it came from, and there were several that went out. And so I got a very disturbing letter from the Secretary of State's office that says, that states, your flyer, your flyer, your flyer, and that that perhaps people from my campaign had delivered them and all this other kind of stuff. She just accusation after accusation after accusation.
Nassett, a longtime grassroots transportation activist who works a graveyard shift at a downtown hotel, says she arrived home from work to find a media scrum in her yard and no idea what had happened. Her political opponent, one of the most powerful political leaders in the state, earned a windfall of support through the incident. But Nassett's social media blew up with personal attacks on her credibility.
I had all of this media people show up, and people attacked me online, and people saying that she was being trashed. And then I get a second letter from the Secretary of State that several more of these flyers had gone out, and she needed me to stop and desist.
Even the Secretary of State's office assumed Nassett had shelled out big bucks to print and distribute the pamphlets. Nassett has denied from the beginning knowing anything about it, but was beaten down by officials as well as her fellow Democrats.
That's not my flyer, not my campaign, not something I would have done, period.
Then 2 weeks ago, the Oregonian published a story linking a left-wing political action committee named Wolfpack to the leaflet makers, who began publishing flyers with the same language as the fake leaflet under the name of Americans Take Action.
Well, then the Oregonian called me on Friday morning or Thursday night and said, oh, yeah, the new flyer is coming out, and it's this organization that's Democratic, it's from out of area, that they get involved in primaries trying to take out Democrats who aren't behaving democratically, and when they have opponents that they would like to see in. Has nothing to do with me, and they know that it happens in different states.
A quick web search shows that Americans Take Action is the 501c4 organization linked to Wolfpack. Ironically, that organization, Wolfpack, was formed in opposition to Citizens United. The Supreme Court decision that allowed money to be regulated the same way as speech. So Wolfpack is designed to try to help people like Sharon get into office despite running against very powerful opponents. But in this case, they had the opposite effect. The KBOO News contacted Wolfpack last week about the case, asking if their group had published the materials without Nassett's knowledge. Wolfpack Executive Director Paul Michael Tidwell responded in writing to the KBOO News request for a comment with this statement. We've been told specifically not to. The only thing I feel at liberty to disclose to you is that it wasn't Nassett who distributed them, and it was unsanctioned action that Nassett had no control over. Not everyone who is assisting her campaign is employed or a volunteer for her specifically. You know how Citizens United works, I would hope. Cannot coordinate with the candidate, said Wolfpack Executive Director Paul Michael Tidwell in a written response. Oregon Secretary of State Adkins Chief of Staff Laura Hutchings sent Sharon Nassett an email on Friday afternoon stating that At this point, we cannot determine who produced and or distributed the guide. As an interested partner in this investigation, I wanted to provide you with the latest information that we are tracking. We have received information about boxes of the guides being illegally disposed of in Vancouver, Washington, and we are attempting to identify the person responsible to see if that sheds light on the source of the guide. We will keep you apprised of developments. Nassett is reeling from the damage to her campaign, while she was sure at first that she could beat Kotek, who is the Speaker of the House. The drama of the fake pamphlets might be impossible to overcome. Election Day is May 17th. For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving. There's a lot of talk these days about small businesses and their role in the economy. Is the economy good or is it bad, and why? Here live to speak with us about her experience as a businesswoman is Yvonne Williams of Yvonne Salon. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, I have all these business questions, but first, you actually have a KBOO connection.
Can I just
ask real quick, what is your KBOO connection?
Well, history, my first cousin was a disc jockey, and I used to come down here as a child, all the way until I was about the age of 14, and I got to get on the air sometimes and hang out and get into libraries and fine music and things of that nature. So I had a lot of fun down here.
All right. And thanks again for coming in tonight. So first of all, talk about your business. What do you do?
Well, I run a salon in North Portland over in the Kenton District, and I've been there for the last 15 years, and I started up at the age of 25, and I've been there going strong and still comfortable to this day.
Okay, but now I want to ask, within your salon, what do you do? Because a lot of us think, I'm going to go to the salon and get my hair done, but you actually provide quite a few services. And I'm asking again, from the point of view of a small business, what are all the services that you provide in your business?
Within the salon, I have a aesthetics license, and I call myself a therapist, actually. So within the community, lots of people come there. I offer jobs and to people that are actually having a struggle with getting jobs. So whether you're into janitorial, maybe you can just come over and help escort people around that are handicapped, they're getting out their cars. So I've just been trying to help my community in reference to saying, look, I'll bring other people in that are having a hard time getting work. I do beauty, facials,
massage.
I did have a massage therapist. I'm actually in hunt of a new one. And we're looking forward to getting in new nail techs and things of that nature. So a lot of different services are coming out of the salon, and I have a hair product line, and we're just trying to push everything and become incorporated.
All right. Why did you decide to become an entrepreneur, a small business owner? Because everybody dreams of that in the United States, but that's a really hard path. What made you decide to do that?
One of my first decisions were, I worked in a lot of different industries coming up since the age of 14. And what I experienced was a lot of people would tell you the challenges of saying, I'm the big boss, it's big me, little you. And going throughout life, I always figured, well, at some point, I didn't want to be labeled as little me, big somebody else. I just kind of wanted to be an equal. I wanted to work. I didn't want to be bossed around. So I decided to go ahead and take a venture and say, a leap of faith, actually, and say, well, I think I can do this boss thing for myself. And I want to just run my own business and be the boss of me. And so I looked at other people in the industry, my father, my uncles, and I seen that they were being pretty successful with what they were doing. So one day I just kind of walked off of my job at Wells Fargo, and I never looked back.
Okay, so Yvonne, now we've read where I think Mayor Hales is proposing some kind of a new tax on businesses. I feel as if I've seen another local candidate proposing a tax on small businesses, and I've heard other candidates for office talking about, well, on one hand, candidates will say businesses suffer and we need to support them because they're the backbone of our society. And then on another hand, I'll hear businesses, you know, certain candidates talking about, you know, there hasn't been a raise in the something-something business tax. There's multiple business taxes. Mm-hmm. There hasn't been a raise in the city's business license tax in 40 years. I think that's the mayor's thing. Meow, meow, meow. Yvonne, what were the businesses that the expenses that you had to cover before you even opened your doors? As you know, I know that you're not Donald Trump, right? Because we all think of Donald Trump. But what about you? What did you have to cover?
Well, first you start off just educational. The education for a cosmetology degree starts at least $25,000. And normally you would look back in the day and you would say, well, I'm just a beautician or a hairdresser. But once you got to a stage where it formed into where you had to know the anatomy of things and it went a bit further and having theory and knowledge of other things, then they pumped the prices up. And so education came first. Then going into the entrepreneurial part of it, then you had to look at, well, can I get a business loan? And at 25, credit-wise and paying back student loans.
At the age of 25.
Yes, at the age of 25, going into it and paying back student loans. So to support the business going into it, I just said, well, let's work a part-time job. No pride intended. Let's work a part-time job. Let's support the small business. And I think that's what a lot of small business owners end up doing, because they don't have this large savings or anything to help back them, or they don't have the credit or, you know, the ability to go in and just get a loan and off the top. And so I think that's where we start.
And I know that the Portland Development Commission has all sorts of loans. But here's the thing, with a loan, you have to pay it back. So how expensive does that get? I mean, if I'm getting too personal, you could say that's too personal. But I mean, how expensive is that? Just the service on the debt?
Well, for me, I started when I got involved in it. I went through the Mercy Corps program at least two times throughout the history of it. I took where I started my business plan first and foremost, and that was actually a free program. And then they actually started matching you funds, which is called a match program. And I encourage anybody that's looking into going to small business is to get in contact with Mercy Corp and, you know, go into matching and some fine skills that they always ask me, well, do you have a business degree, or is this something that you went to school to do? I took a lot of different courses, just small mini courses. And I give those praises to the Mercy Corp for that. And then after that, I went and got a grant from PDC, which I'm still working with today, doing like storefront improvement for windows.
Now, a grant you do not have to pay back.
You don't have to pay back.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay, keep going.
So you want to search out for those grants. Everything that I did was somewhat trial but not error, because you're trying to tap into whatever resources you have or whatever you can find out. And this kind of programming is good for people to listen into, so they can find out where these resources are, how you can get grant money, how you can get in match programs, how you can get yourself set up to where you can succeed and not fail.
All right. If you just tuned in, we're talking with Yvonne Williams of Yvonne Salon. We're taking the pulse of a local small business that seems to be quite blossoming. Now, Yvonne, what was your biggest obstacle in starting your small business?
My biggest obstacle was being a 25 at a young age. A lot of people didn't respect me as an entrepreneur, a business owner, or a boss. So with the hiring phase, a lot of people were older than me, that had been in the industry longer than me, and didn't know how to really approach me in reference to saying, oh, wow, she's the boss, and I have to kind of abide by whatever rules she sets. So that keeping that pace was kind of rocky. And just when I'd gotten to like maybe 35, I would say I'll be 40 in July. I'm just now kind of getting to that point where people go, oh, wow, yeah, you are the boss, huh? And it's okay today. But then it's been really hard. It's been a challenge.
I'll be darned. That is not what I thought you would say. And I'm going to think about that for a long time.
Yeah.
So what has helped you the most? Or
what's,
who?
What's helped me the most are family, friends, and a lot of different advocates. People that come into the salon that I come in contact with, people that I've networked with in the past, people that have been in the industry. My father is one of my biggest fans, and he's
Who's your dad?
My dad is Garland Norman, and he's the proud owner of A Step Above Shoes in Northeast Portland over 20 some odd years now. And so that's the first place I went to when I walked off my job. And I kind of just sat there and said, you know, I think I'm just going to do my own thing too. And from that place, and I ended up passing by this building one day, and a fine gentleman by the name of Mr. Roland Catlett opened his doors, and he called me one day and he goes, well, if you get this building, what are you going to do with it? And I said, well, I guess I'll open up a salon. And he goes, if you want it, you got it. As easy as that. And I've been there ever since, and he's been a great backer for me. And I've had my grandma's moms and everybody else, a bunch of ladies cheering, and they've all passed on now. And I'm just living this legacy out and showing them that, you know, it could be done.
So it sounds like you made some of your own luck. It sounds like you organized, you found training.
Yeah.
And then when there were people there that could help you, you had it ready to go.
Yes.
So I want to, just to build on that a little bit, how many people do you know who talk about opening a small business? Besides, my dad talked about that for years, okay? Mm-hmm. Many years ago, and he long since passed away. It was his dream. That's a dream, just like buying your own house.
Yes.
And when you hear other people talk, what do you hear their obstacles being, if you can get a sense of that?
A lot of the biggest obstacles that I found or that I hear people talk about are finances. And so financially would probably be the biggest on the poll.
Finances. All right. We have 1 minute left. I want to, okay, this is what I just want to cut to the chase. So for other people listening right now, especially people who are from communities that suffer from discrimination in jobs and housing in Portland, Oregon, in our metro area. Oh, wow, the list is pretty long there.
Mm-hmm.
What advice do you have?
I would tell people to go ahead, tap into resources that are out there for you. Ask your local neighbor, ask your local bank. If you can get funded, get a higher education. Just go for your dreams, go for your goals, never look back. The venture is long, but the tunnel is short.
All right. All right. Thanks, Yvonne.
Thank you.
That was Yvonne Williams, the master stylist and owner at Yvonne's Salon. Reach her at YSSALON65@yahoo.com.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth focus on liberation movements in the Philippines. That's followed by Labor Radio at 6, Radio of the Working Class, by the Working Class, and for the Working Class. That's followed by Prison Pipeline at 6:30, a Mother's Day special in which host Amy Johnson will interview her mother about the effect the incarceration of her son, Amy's brother, has had on her. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. News and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tonight's weather, mostly clear with low around 50. Tomorrow, sunny with a high near 79. Today in history, in 1974, the U.S. House Judiciary Committee opened hearings on articles of impeachment against President Richard M. Nixon. And in 1994, the newly elected Parliament of South Africa chose Nelson Mandela as president. The quote of the day is from the late U.S. Representative Barbara Jordan, who said, "Think what a better world it would be if we all, the whole world, had cookies and milk about 3 o'clock every afternoon and then lay down on our blankets for a nap."
It's 5:33, time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Is this really happening? Is Donnie Trump really going to be the Republican Party's nominee? More preposterous, try saying this, President Donnie Trump. Surely not. I was in Washington recently and went to the Lincoln Memorial. Looking up at that magnificent statue of Honest Abe, I swear I saw tears streaming down his face. Still, whatever you think of the Donald, you've got to give the preening yellow-crested peacock credit for one important contribution he has made to America. He saved us from Ted Cruz. As Molly Ivins wrote during George W. Bush's terrible tenure, "Next time I tell you someone from Texas should not be president of the United States, please pay attention." I'm channeling Molly's spirit when I tell you that Cruz is seriously dangerous. He's not merely an autocratic, plutocratic, theocratic extremist, but a conniving, lying, vainglorious egomaniac with dictatorial right-wing ambitions. He's Joe McCarthy, without the charm or self-restraint. As a junior Tea Party senator, Cruz made his mark on Washington by throwing a silly temper tantrum that literally shut down our government. But that doesn't mean he's against big government. Au contraire, as we Texans say, Ted wants to head a monstrously big, violent, and grossly intrusive government. Again and again, he has revealed a harebrained, shoot-from-the-lip, chicken-hawk eagerness to start wars around the world and use invasive, unconstitutional police power here at home. In response to the Syrian refugee tragedy, for example, he said he not only would ban Syrian Muslims from entering the U.S., but he'd also have government authorities, quote, patrol and secure every Muslim neighborhood in America. This is Jim Hightower saying, holy Thomas Paine, this un-American extremist shouldn't be allowed to visit the White House, much less sit in the Oval Office.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit hightowerlowdown.org.
The state of Maine has voted to end a superdelegate voting system that does not reflect the popular vote within the Democratic Party. With the state's most recent primary, the superdelegate's vote did not actually match that of the popular vote. Bernie Sanders obtained 64% of the popular vote in Maine, yet only managed to get one superdelegate. Hillary Clinton, with 35% of the vote, has received an endorsement from three superdelegates, with one remaining undecided. The amendment won't go into effect until the year 2020.
The U.S. Department of Justice filed a federal lawsuit this afternoon against North Carolina over the state's controversial HB2 bill, also known as the bathroom law. HB2 requires transgender people use the bathroom corresponding to their biological sex. The federal lawsuit says the bill violates provisions in the Civil Rights Act, Title IX of the Education Act's amendment, and the Violence Against Women Reauthorization Act. In a speech announcing the lawsuit, Attorney General Loretta Lynch said, quote, "This action is about a great deal more than bathrooms. This is about the dignity and respect that we accord our fellow citizens." The lawsuit comes after the DOJ sent a letter to North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory last week stating HB2 violates the Civil Rights Act and ordering the governor to respond by today that the state will not comply with or implement the bill. This morning, North Carolina filed a suit against the federal government calling the DOJ's position, quote, "baseless and pointless overreach." Attorney General Lynch said that based on the state's response, the DOJ decided to move forward with its civil rights lawsuit.
A federal judge today ruled that Florida's new death penalty law is unconstitutional. Judge Milton Hirsch of the Federal 11th District Circuit Court made the ruling in the case of Karen Gator, who is currently on trial in Florida for first-degree murder. Florida's death penalty statute had been declared unconstitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court in early January of this year. The law allowed a judge to impose the death penalty, even in cases where only 7 out of 12 jurors supported it. The Supremes ruled that unconstitutional in an 8-to-1 decision. Most states with a death penalty require a unanimous decision by the jury before capital punishment may be imposed. The Florida legislature put together a new death penalty law, yet the new statute still allows for a death penalty if only 10 out of 12 jurors agree. Judge Hirsch ruled the law still falls short, saying that it's not a question of arithmetic, but rather, it's a question of justice. Florida has the second largest list of inmates on death row among all U.S. states and leads the nation in the number of inmates wrongfully sentenced to death row who were later exonerated.
A new study conducted by researchers at Duke University found that thousands of fracking wastewater spills have caused widespread contamination throughout North Dakota. The study found there were nearly 4,000 accidental spills in North Dakota alone over the past 4 years, which released unlawfully high levels of radioactive materials, heavy metals, and corrosive salts. The spills occurred both on land and in rivers, with the vast majority caused by failed pipelines, leaking pipe valves and connectors, and tank leaks and overflows. The leaking fracking liquids are considered more toxic than oil spills, since the inorganic compounds that make up the fluid are largely non-biodegradable. One spill site found radioactive radium levels at 4,600 becquerels per kilogram of soil. That's more than 25 times over the legal limit for disposal at area landfills. Radium has a half-life of 1,600 years, meaning it will take more than 10,000 years for the radium to break down to safe levels. There are more than 9,500 fracking wells located in North Dakota alone. Every day, more than 2 billion gallons of fracking liquid is injected into the ground nationwide.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Grace Ann Smith, Ken Jones, Don Zur, Theo Burke, and Jenka Soderberg. Special thanks to Pamela Santos. The producer is Doug McVeigh. Our engineer is Danielle Parks. Welcome back, Danielle. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. Or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. If you'd like to call your elected representatives about any issue you've heard on the news tonight, here are the phone numbers, so get a pen. The local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. The number for Senator Jeff Merkley is 503-326-3386. Representative Greg Walden is 541-389-4408. Oregon Governor Kate Brown's number is 503-378-3111. Portland Mayor Charlie Hales can be reached at 503-823-4120. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath, 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River, 91.9 FM. I'm Ken Jones.
And I'm Lisa Loving. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on the Abe and Joe Talk radio show, representatives from the Sanders and Clinton campaigns weigh in on the Democratic presidential race. At 9 on Alternative Radio, activist and author Bill McKibben speaks on breaking away from fossil fuels. At 10, it's Eric Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on stage in studio, D. May Roberts features Defunct Theater's world premiere production of The Udmurts by David Zelnick. And at 11:30 on Art Focused, host Joseph Gallivan interviews Jeff Yahn, editor of Port, and video artist Adam Simmons about Habitats, a group show at the University of Oregon Portland campus. Thanks so much, KBOO members, for your generous support in our recent membership drive.
And now, stay tuned for an in-depth report on liberation movements in the Philippines. Good night, Lisa.
Good night, Don.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
This is Pamela Santos for KBOO Evening News, and I'm going to be talking to a group of people. This is a phone interview with the representatives of the Lakbay Lumad USA Tour. They're going to be here in Portland from May 9th to May 16th. And I'm just going to have everyone introduce themselves.
Hi, this is Angelica Lim from Gabriela Portland and Portland Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines. We are both grassroots organizations committed to the liberation of Filipino people through self-determination and advancing the national democratic movement.
I'm Lillian Lim. I'm also a member of the Gabriela Portland. And we are here to support the LUMAD.
I'm Norma Capuyan from Southern Philippines. I live in the province of North Cotabato, a coverage of Region 12, representing Ba'i Mindanao, Ba'i Kalumaran. Ba'i means women leader in whole Indigenous Peoples Alliance network, women network in Mindanao. And also, I'm representing Vice Chairperson of Kalumaran. Kalumaran means Indigenous Peoples Alliance in Mindanao. And my local organization in the province of North Cotabato, I also the chairperson of Indigenous People, Unity of Indigenous Peoples Living in Mount Apo.
Thank you. What do we need to know about the events taking place in Mindanao and specifically affecting the LUMAD?
Bali, yung isa sa mga objective namin dito dahil isa ako sa sumabay nitong Lakbay LUMAD USA dahil ang Lakbay LUMAD USA ay ipinagpatuloy lang namin ang ginagawa namin doon sa Pilipinas, yung tinatawag namin na Manilakbayan. Ang Manilakbayan ay nagsimula since 2012 hanggang 2015 dahil sa matinding militarization doon sa Mindanao at matinding pagsilikas ng mga mamamayang katutubo doon sa amin mismo sa Mindanao.
This is a continuation of the movement that they started in 2012 and then still happening up to now. This is because of the severe militarization of Indigenous people, who are the by term LUMAD, and they have a lot of them have been threatened. They have evacuated, and they have not gone back to their land because of the severe militarization.